This is section 7 of the PDH online audio course on electrical specifications. We're going to talk about CSI specification format, that is the template of the internals of the specification. And this is based on the 1999, I believe, version. There is supposed to be a new version coming out. It's not available, and there will be new PDH online material as soon as that is available and has been discussed enough, we know what we're talking about. A construction specification should look like a construction specification, not like a technical memo and not like an invoice. The header and footer for the CSI 1999 format looks like something that's included in the written version, and I'll try to read it to you. In the header, first is owner on the upper left, below that project name and location. On the upper right is issue date. And then the specification text makes up the content of the specification. The footer contains the project number, in the center's project specification number and page number, and on the right the specification name. So when you pick it up, you know what you've got in your hand. You know what project it is, you know what revision it is, you know what specification you're looking at, and you know what page of it, so you can see if one page is missing. They should be in order from beginning to end. The last words in the specification should say section whatever ends and specification. The text within the specification should look something like this. You start with the header. We have a section number, and rather than trying to be generic and getting into the complicated language that happens that way, I use 16131. So this is not the complete 16131, but it uses 131 as the example of how it's supposed to look. So again, starting the specification, there's a header. We say in all caps, center top, section 16131. We are division 16, section 131, 16131, and we'll have paragraphs that follow. Conduit, that's the name of this in the particular one I copied from. Part 1, general. Again, in CSI spec format, there are three parts: general, product, and execution. When people are modifying these, they're not very careful to get the stuff in the right section. I'm also guilty of this too. When a problem comes up, it's a very common occurrence that the spec is out there, but we've got to add a section to it. Addendum. When it's out for bid, but we've got to change the specification before we take the bid, we call that an addendum. Well, you can modify the specification. The goal is always to add a few words to the existing specification, not write a new specification, not write a paragraph. There are a lot of incentives to keep the content of the addendum as small as possible. So you look for a place where it fits. So if you find a place where they're talking about something similar to what you have to modify, that's where you put it. And again, in the addendum context, it works pretty well. It's hard for the guy in the field because he doesn't know this story. He didn't see the original version. He didn't see the change. He just sees the final spec. And he has to look for these special words that make a significant change in it. But again, this is how we get to where we are. Part 1 is general. Part 2 is product. Part 3 is execution. 1.01, section includes. Now, this can be brief or extensive. This is the local scope definition. In conduit, I copied down to show the format of this. 1.01, section includes, below that, A, conduit fittings and conduit bodies. Other things that are included in this section should be listed here. For instance, if during an addendum you add words to something further back, make sure it shows up on the section includes. In the addendum, it will be identified as a revision. And again, it brings everyone's attention to something that has been changed. And it's a good place for the guy who gets it in the field without knowing the story. If it includes something and you have something just a little bit off the wall that's been added to it, but it says it in the first paragraph of the specification, you're not hiding it from him. Section 1, paragraph 1.02, related section. Again, I only show the first one. Section 02582, underground electrical ducts and manholes. So it sounds like the project for this template conduit included underground conduits. Obviously, if you're not doing underground conduits, that doesn't belong there. There's a raging argument whether you should delete it or not. It costs the engineering firm man hours to delete it. If the scope changes and it's added in at a later date, it's a real pain to add it in at the later date. So if farther back you just say not used, a lot of people think that's a real good solution to the problem that satisfies everyone's needs. References. Again, 1.03 references. A is ANSI C80.1, American National Standard Specification for Rigid Steel Conduit, zinc-coated, 1994. Again, raging controversy. Should you put the PVC reference in if you're not using any PVC in your project? I always say yes. I even say back when you get into the project definition, give them a real good definition of what you want on PVC. For instance, I only buy Schedule 80. I will not buy Schedule 40 PVC. If you hold them in your hand, Schedule 80 is husky stuff. It's going to take a lot of abuse during construction. It's going to take a lot of abuse when it's in place. Schedule 40 just barely holds its shape. You almost can't walk on it. I mean, it's flimsy stuff. If you had them in your hand, you'd never accept Schedule 40. Obviously, it's cheaper. Well, should you specify PVC if there's none used in your project? My answer is yes. Put it in the product specification. Do not put it in the application, because the application is the clear statement. What do you use in this location? If it doesn't say PVC, you don't use PVC, no matter where else it shows up in different contexts. 1.04, submittals. See section 01300, administrative requirements for submittals and procedures. Now, this is what we've been talking about all the way through. The best way to handle this is to have a good front-end section and reference it, and make sure the engineer knows about it, so when he's reviewing submittals, he knows if it complies with 01300. Do I have the copy of the front end on any specification for any project I'm working on currently? No, but I know where I can get them. The architect has them, the project leader has them, and if I am a good boy, I go down and check that when we're reviewing the final issue for the bid set, and when questions come up on submittals, I can go down and look at them. I don't have them on my desk. The newer projects are all on a server file, and I can look at 01300 just as easily as looking at 16131. So the world is changing for the better. Paragraph 1.05, quality assurance. In this particular specification, A is conformed to the requirements of NFPA 70. There is no raging controversy on this, but I have to chuckle every time I see this. The inspection authority, that is the city inspector, the county inspector, the state inspector, looks for compliance with the National Electric Code. Every contractor I know is very familiar with the National Electric Code. How many times do we have to tell him to follow the National Electric Code? Well, it depends on how much trouble you've had in the past. And again, if there are specific problems, they should be called out as specific specifications also. Nothing wrong with referencing the National Electric Code again and again. Paragraph 1.06, delivery, storage, and handling. Accept conduit on-site, inspect for damage. Now, interestingly, this didn't reference the front-end section that handles delivery, storage, and handling. Why? I'd say that's an oversight in the one I'm using. Possibly the portions I didn't reproduce have that in it. I'm continuing on to page 2 now that has the header we talked about previously. We're into part 2, products. Paragraph 2.01, section includes A, conduit size, comply with NFPA 70, 1 under conduit size, minimum size 3/4 inch unless otherwise specified. Once again, we talked in some detail about the application table that says for each application, the minimum is 3/4 inch or 1 inch or 1 1/4 or 4 inch, depending. Manufacturers, A, allied tube and conduit. I didn't go any further. There are obviously a number of people that make good conduit. In Part 3, Execution, Paragraph 3.01, Examination, verify that field measurements are as shown on drawings. Now, there is a lot of hidden content in this statement. There are errors in drawing sets. Whose responsibility is the error? Well, if the contractor agrees to put in 10,000 linear feet of conduit and the project requires 15,000 linear feet of conduit, to me it seems reasonable the project should pay him an adder. On the other hand, if we're talking about 10,000 and 10,500, it's hard for me to get real excited about that. So, when we say verify field measurements as shown, there is an implication of transferring the liability to the contractor. He was told to verify it. He didn't bring it up in a timely manner. He doesn't get paid for it. Whoops. I have seen a wording in this section on examination, bring to the engineer's attention immediately any discrepancies. Now, you can look at this two ways. Once again, you're trying to stick it to the contractor if anything goes sour later on. On the other hand, you're looking for problems so we can fix them and work it out before it becomes a serious expensive problem, or at least we know we've used up the contingency before we get to the end of the project. Paragraph 3.02, related sections. Install conduits securely in a neat and workmanlike manner as specified in NECA1. Well, why do we put that in execution rather than in reference? I think it belongs here. Now, again, I copied this from an actual working spec on a current project. NEC is the National Electrical Contractors Association, and it's a nice little readable spec, that this NECA1. It is not burdensome. It just lists things that you would ordinarily call good sense, and I think it belongs here exactly. If the installer does something really, really bad, you can almost certainly find it violates NECA1. And again, it's not an unfair imposition on him. Good workmanship is all that there is in NECA. Typically, electricians are proud of their work. Contractors are proud of their work. They do bad things when they're forced into it by time or conflicts or interferences or something. Paragraph 3.03, interface with other products. Install conduit to preserve fire-resistant rating of partitions and other elements using materials and methods specified in 07840. And I'm assuming 07840 is fire stopping. I mentioned this before. 16050 is a nice place to put this. I believe strongly in putting it in 16130 for the raceway as well. It makes real good sense to me. And this completes the template, end section 16130, for the template we're talking about. Now, a major warning. Make sure reference specifications are in the bid set. It looks so very, very bad to reference something that's not available to the contractor. And he won't notice it till there's a problem. You know, when you're doing something wrong on the material acceptance and handling, you know, you see the stuff sitting out in the yard rusting. You say, hey, why didn't you put it aside? It says so in the spec. You say, well, where in the spec? And you reference something on the front end that isn't there in the final bid set. Well, again, we've talked about this again and again. You can put it in your own specification. You can reference it in the front end. But for goodness sake, if you reference it in the front end, make sure it's there. The above sample pages are included to indicate formatting and layout used internally for the CSI specifications per the 1999 standard. The complete specification in the appendix may help if this format use is not clear. We're talking about CSI format. Be aware that prime engineering firms and owners often have their own standard specifications and formats. A prime engineering firm takes the whole project but subs out portions as electrical for various reasons, including meeting minority business enterprise quotas. The other specs may or may not use CSI division numbers and internal format. It is non-trivial to convert from one format to another, which is very nearly the same. Very careful proofreading is required. Project leaders do not allocate enough time for conversion and proofreading. Now, let me say this again. If we are using the owner's standard specifications, You can't just bring in a CSI spec and say, whoops, we need labeling and tagging. Let's pull this in. Can't do that. If you want to be a good boy, you have to reformat it to the owner's format. And it's a pain. It's not really difficult. It's not really hard. Just very time consuming. And it's always been my case that you have one person convert it, another person proof it, and then do that until everybody's happy with it. It takes a lot of time. Sometimes it's very difficult to edit a specification you're given. Each organization usually has a master secretary, that's a word I made up, who can do the job. The alternate is for a journeyman secretary to retype the spec on a clean sheet. When you attempt to edit specifications yourself, you discover an interesting feature in Microsoft Word called auto-indent. As soon as Word figures out that you're making a numbered list, it tries to help. Unfortunately, its spaces between paragraphs different than the way specifications do, and it tabs differently than the way specifications do. Again, a very highly skilled secretary can modify or adjust the Word features to work on specifications. Most engineers and designers cannot. I try to turn off the auto indent and the feature that converts readable fractions into unreadable characters. In Microsoft Word, it tries real hard to make 1/8 a little thing that you can't read. Instead of 1/8 taking up 3 character spaces, it's a special character 1/8. And I find that terribly, terribly hard to read. I assume other people are having trouble to read, especially if you get a piece of mud on that part of the document. Well, this concludes this section. Please join me for Section 8, Duplicate and Overlapping Specifications and Final Review Before Issue.